Blog Talk Radio.
Brothers in my smile.
We have been a people that have weak, but since the coming of Imam Wahdatuddin Muhammad, we have an opportunity to be a strong and decisive people. But for the last 40 years, we have sat on our behinds, and most of us have done nothing but complained. So we have decided to come out and to put our complete support in Almighty God and the solution which Imam Muhammad has given us, which is essentially a 15-point solution to our problem. And I am convinced once we believe in that, we will take that to the African-American people. And the African-American people will take that to the American people. And we will defeat all the schemes of Satan. But we must have faith, and we cannot play and complain and be willing to moan, to groan and use other terminology, but not to organize. We have to organize, we have to strategize, and we have to harmonize as a body. Not some individual crying in the wilderness, not similarly situated as many of our African American people have been, partisan hacks who are just willing to say party lines, make statements, whether it be Marxist Lenin statements, Republican statements, Democratic Party statements, but to come from your own African-American soul and speak a universal language. I submit to our audience that Imam Wahdatuddin Muhammad was the foremost advocate of practical, on-the-ground solution. And I have been one of his foremost champions and will continue to be his champion. And since I believe Imam Muhammad lives through his ministry and through his work, and through the one who is preserving his work, Imam Wahdatuddin Muhammad II, and I stand firmly, unequivocally, without hesitation, with a rededicated, rehumanized, refocused efforts to advocate before the world that we have the solution to the global pollution. And with that in mind, we are here from Selma, Alabama, with our brother and our friend, Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam. There's a lot going on in the world today. But I believe that God says, as God says, the believers must. He didn't say they can, didn't say they should, didn't say they would, must win through. And I'm convinced we're going to win. We're going to be successful. And I'm not talking about no 10, 15, 20 years now. Imam Muhammad said, when all of the concerns come together as one, the dead will rise. And when the dead rise, there's no more room for death. There's only room for life and life more abundantly. So we welcome our brother and friend, Brother Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam from Selma, Alabama, and want him to comment with a sober mind on the recent murder, alleged murders, and the recent events that has taken place in Texas. I've been here the opportunity to process them. I was busy preparing for other lectures. Not that I don't be, I'm not on these things. I'm not a reactionary. I'm not an emotional person. And as a result of not being an emotional person, I'm a thinker, and I wait until I process people. I don't believe in news cycles. I believe in responding as a thoughtful person in the followers of God's prophet, Muhammad, God's messenger, Muhammad, and our prophet, Muhammad, with the insights of Imam Wahdatuddin Muhammad. I don't take a part of Imam Wahdatuddin Muhammad. I take the full cup. So with that, Brother Imam, would you comment on the events that took place in Texas? As best I know, I only glanced at the television screen, so I only know what is reported to me. I was busy preparing for other efforts we have and other work we are doing, because we are daily engaging and inviting people to the way of God. Thank you, Brother Imam.
Yes, sir. Thank you, my brother, and it's a pleasure to be here. this afternoon, and I certainly convey my condolences in a spiritual sense, because I'm not present with the families of the victims of gross and inhuman injustice, the Sterling family, as well as the Castillo family. But also, our condolences go out to our men and women in blue. I served on the city council in the city of Selma, President Pro Tem. While I would always demand excellence from law enforcement, they had a special friend in me. As long as they upheld the Constitution and lived up to their commission and their mission to protect and serve. So we don't want any of our law enforcement people have such a difficult job to be unfairly and wantonly treated, more or less talking about kill. But so our hearts are just stretched with a sense of sadness for the victims of injustice and for men and women in blue who lost their lives from the work of a deranged individual. Having said that, I'm going to get straight to the point. Our founding fathers were very wise in how they structured Brother Imam, the bedrock principles of this republic. They had a basic constitutional structure, and then they added a structural supplement, a component, and they called the Bill of Rights. And they prioritized the Bill of Rights. In their mind, the first priority in this republic is that the people should have the right to worship God. G-A-D. The Second Amendment was to give us a situation where the people could bear arms and militias, not having a personal individual right to bear arms. There's some confusion on that question. For years, if you research constitutional law, there never was a clear, delineated opinion which said that individuals had a right to bear arms. Bear with me, I'm trying to get somewhere. The late Justice Scalia lived in a decision called the Heller decision, where he ruled in favor of a qualified right of individuals, according to my understanding, to bear arms. It was qualified in the sense that even the First Amendment, freedom of expression, is qualified. The normal Hornbook understanding of the First Amendment is that we don't have an unequivocal, undelimited right to unify in a crowded theater. So he did acknowledge that individuals had this right. And I'm getting to the punchline. But that right could be regulated. What we have in a general sense in America today. And this is not news, headline, impetuous talk or impulsive talk. Because I think in that sense I differ with you, because God says in the Holy Book that events, that commotion will follow off repeated commotion. And if he's intervening in history, causing this commotion followed by off repeated commotion, then we should be sensitized and in touch with what he's trying to do. These events are from the Creator, not from CNN, not from MSNBC, not from Fox or any other man-made organ. These events are signs of the day of Yom Midday. Having said that, you know, I appreciate your powerful statements and your conviction, and I certainly don't want to get in a splitting hair discussion with a brother like yourself who's so dignified and dedicated to a bigger picture. But I wanted to clarify that. What decision did he rule us in? We got to make a decision as to whether we want a country based upon a natural, realistic First Amendment where the people in America depend ultimately upon the Creator and his forces, or whether or not we want to depend upon the material force to aid and protect us that come out of the barrel of a gun. That powerful materialist from China that lived in the 20th century, Mao Zedong, he said clearly that power, political power, and other power comes out of the barrel of a gun. Now, we can make the choice to be a people that devolve all Americans into a vicious, aggressive, material power, gun power culture. But in the decision that and this is the punchline, that the justice offered, the majority opinion, is called a Heller decision. What we see in America now, the cutting edge, look at that word, hell and error. If we put gun power over divine power and God power, America is going to break out into a totally destructive, murderous, barbaric society. What we see now is only child's play. What's going to happen at the Republican convention when these brothers come from all over the country in an open carry state, packing, strapped to the hilt? I heard them on a broadcast, NPR, talking about the fact that they're planning to come to Cleveland Pat. It's a white male privilege to be able to pack. Let's unpack this statement. Texas is an open carry state. There was an African-American last night that was openly carrying a weapon, which he had a right to do in Texas. I've seen other events in Texas where Caucasian males were openly and regularly displaying their weaponry. Nobody was arrested. Soon as this African-American hit the public, they put him on international notice as a suspect for these brutal killings. Okay, look at Castile. He had a permit. He had a license to carry. But he received a result with that, having that gun, that these people that's advocating the Second Amendment primacy in America never would experience. Think in Louisiana, they have a similar law. But what happened with that black man with a gun? He ended up dead. What's my point? Unfortunately, even though they got this Second Amendment rule, it appears that all the way back to the Black Panthers up to now, black men and guns don't mix unless we appoint them at each other. The way many of our young males who are not politically conscious. What happens, Brother Imam, in this hellish scenario that I'm describing, if these super predators in our community that's been wantonly and maliciously killing up each other, if they do like this young man did in Texas, allegedly did, or like Scott up in Tennessee, Bristol, Tennessee, today got to randomly shoot at whites, hit a police officer, kill one person and wounded two others, and he made the statement, "I'm tired of white folk killing us." So it's not just the guy in Texas. What happens if this happened on a large-scale basis? And then what happens if the right-wing gun crazy nuts that have no faith in Jesus Christ of Nazareth anymore, but looking at that, looking for their protection in the hell coming out the barrel of a gun, and they begin to encounter and retaliate vigilante style against these forces, these political-sized forces. This young man in Texas was not just a gangbanger, was not even a gangbanger. He was a middle class, looked like from the facility, upper middle that he lived in, upper middle class African-American. But his paperwork claimed that they discovered that he perceived himself as a political-sized black militant. And then to complicate it, we have a presumptive nominee of a major political party in America in this kind of climate that ripe for divisiveness and interracial hostility, stoking the fires, have insulted and alienated every minority group in the country, including the Jewish minority, recently. It's a mercy in the name of that decision. Putting utmost primacy in the Second Amendment over the First Amendment will precipitate a hellish state in America. Brother, ma'am, you and the audience can take that to the bank.
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask you a question. I did hear a pretty decent cook by the day that responded, I thought, intelligently to the conditions that is going on in America. What should be the response of Muslim African Americans, first as Muslims, secondly as African Americans, and Africans in America, and Americans? What do you say about those three questions that we should be asking and answering in reference to these questions?
There is an obligation for us to go out and penetrate the order, to be foremost as witnesses to human excellence. You suggest organize, organize, participate, participate. Now, I saw a deputy chief of police from Dallas today, Chief Aziz, being interviewed on CNN for a long period of time. My memory may have served, I think, that at one point this brother identified with the leadership of Imam Muhammad. I remember at one time he may have been a practicing Muslim. I'm not sure now. I think that's been years ago when I noticed his work in Dallas. Now, I could be wrong, but if my assessment is correct, that's what we all need to do as Muslims. Can you imagine the impact of this intelligent African-American-looking man with all these folks over America having to see Chief Aziz on their television stream talking about the best in America, talking about our civic responsibility, talking about our need to respect law enforcement and vice versa? That's our challenge. We must penetrate the society aggressively. We must organize internally, and we must participate in everything that's for good. If it's for good, we should participate. There's a vacuum out there of hearing a sober-minded voice that's rooted in First Amendment spiritual power and not Second Amendment gun power. There's a vacuum. And as the old adage suggests, nature holds a vacuum. And we need to be about the business of filling that vacuum. I was on 50 Watts Power Television, radio in Selma this week. Some powerful African Americans have given me a chance to express for an hour every Wednesday. We're discussing these issues. We have to discuss what happened leading up to this weekend, this coming Wednesday. My understanding, a police officer in Selma yesterday shot someone in the midst of all this in historic Selma. I think that's the case. Last I heard, the mayor of the city was in the process of calling a press conference. We're going to penetrate the order. We're going to be proactive in putting out a perspective that's sober, devoid of irrationality and emotionalism, rooted in common sense and rooted in the basic good nature that all people can identify with. We're going to intensify our community development classes. I'm going to these people who gave this radio shot spot, round them all up, and send them up here to Brother Salam. Let's talk shop. And then let's get these young men out there working, doing for self, coming out of this illicit death nail, dope slinging economy, and getting back to the good of Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I don't care if they don't do nothing but walk around Selma selling washing powder. This is a brother that will be with them, doing for self, depending on self, getting back to the life of the nation of Islam while overlaying that spiritually with the grand vision of Imam Muhammad. Brother Imam, that's what we must do. And I encourage you in whatever opportunities you have, and I'm hearing it from you, to go out and penetrate, to organize, and take advantage of any forum where we can fill this vacuum that has been opened up in this state of proto hell, moving toward hell.
Well, I'm with you on that. We're going to be holding an all African American men's meeting at the second Sunday in August here in the city of Linden. I said I've been to Chicago. I've been to different cities, Detroit, speaking. I said, at least I should serve as my hometown. So I called the mayor up and said, I'm calling a meeting, and I want to meet with the citizens of Linden. I'm starting with my own people, the African American, having an all-African-American men's meeting with a man who's been very popular in town, not in my city, but actually in Newark, New Jersey, called the Street Doctor. So he and I and two Christian preachers, with me being the main speaker, with a physician, Dr. William Flowers, in fact, was one of the revolutionary people that took over the student administration building at Cornell University. Have to say he's still about change. He and I and others, we're forming a coalition. We're going to start right here where I am, and then we're going to go the fourth Sunday, hopefully in Newark, New Jersey, and we're going to work Newark, New York, with mass meetings. We've even had a big law firm saying they will even help sponsor us. We're meeting with them. We intend to take this message to the public. So see you all second Sunday in August at 740 St. George's Avenue in the great city of Linden, New Jersey, where Mayor Derek A. Armstead is the mayor. And I'm now the town preacher. They call me the town the Rev. Caucasians, African Americans, and others. I also would like to invite all of you to attend the Mosque Cares Convention. This is the ministry set up by Imam Waruddin Muhammad. Those who say they support Imam Waruddin Muhammad should be there. This is Labor Day weekend. We're going to labor. We're going to go to work, and we're going to build our place in America. We're not going to stop. We're going to be committed. We don't care what comes, hell or high water, but we believe that the high waters of opportunity is here for it. I want to ask you a comment that was just brought to by Alfred Y. Muhammad, that the speaker, the former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, and I still call people by that titles, Speaker Gingrich said, some may call me an Uncle Tom, but I was framed by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I never heard Imam Muhammad or the Honorable Elijah Muhammad call people out of that name, so I'm going to stay with that tradition. The speaker again said that Caucasians, or as he put it, white folks, don't get what black folks have to go through. In a dialogue with Van Jones, who is a good political operator, commentator on CNN, attorney that graduated from Yale's Law School, and I didn't know him, and Newt Gingrich, Speaker Gingrich, has been in conversations since in the last 10 years. What do you say about that comment of the Speaker, former Speaker of the House of the United States, House of Representatives?
First of all, Brother Imam, let me say that I certainly hope that you and these other human beings that'll be working together to improve the human condition. Let me say that I support that effort 100%, and I'm with you, and I encourage you to remain firm and persevere in that effort. Brother Imam, look, sometimes we differ, and I don't see eye to eye with some things. To me, that statement of Gingrich, is not worth a dime. When I look at his actions, run around bolstering up a man that has spewed out vile in there against every American minority in this country. Join at the hip with them. I listen to that as nothing but cynical rhetoric. The same way I listen to Donald Trump's tweet last night talking about America is too divided. The divider-in-chief making that statement. I listen to Speaker Gingrich when he stopped dribbling like a flunky in I'm not going to say that. I'll leave it with flunky. To try to get on Trump's ticket. Man, if you believe that, how in the world can you identify with a human being? I don't care if you're using it Machiavellian style, using division as a ploy to get elected, even though he doesn't believe in none of that personally. What's the problem with that? That's a dangerous position. And that tells me that you're so ambitious that you would proffer a political strategy to max out your white base in hopes of winning. Not that you believe in that, but look how many people can be killed. Look how much blood can come from that. What kind of character do you have if you're willing to risk that just to get in a political office? So, brother, I'm not impressed with that statement of former Speaker Gingrich. He can spin that rap to somebody who doesn't have political sense, to politically naive people. In this day and time, your deeds must match your rhetoric. There cannot be a close contradiction, brother, ma'am, between your rhetoric and your deeds. This is a different kind of time. Once upon a time, politically, that may have been par for the course. But again, in this day and time, we're dealing with a global-wide human crisis, and we cannot tolerate any leaders, black or white, that's grossly dividing the sons and daughters of Adam, be it in pretense as a political strategy or as a heartfelt emotions that's deeply rooted in the character. So I hate to disappoint you, but I'm not impressed with that at all.
You're not disappointing me. I was only asking you to react. I'm not disappointed or appointed. I don't take any positions on what the speaker had to say or Mr. Van Jones or even perhaps even the political candidates have to say. I have my own opinion. I speak as a Muslim American of the African descent, so it doesn't faze me one way or the other. I was only passing.
I understand, but I check, our prime concept is Tawheed, oneness of God, oneness of humanity, and oneness of creation.
Yes,
anybody that violates that idea, I have a position on them. I don't care who it is.
Yes, I would agree with you. I ask questions. I don't. Time I really share my opinions are, in fact, on the Sundays. So that's when you hear my opinion. Other than that, I'd like to sit back and ask questions. What would you say?
I understand, but go ahead. I'm sorry. Let's move on. Yeah.
For the American people, about the state of how they view African Americans and its relationship to police, with particular reference to extrajudicial activities of police. What would you say to them?
Well, first of all, the law professionals are not monolithic in their attitude. The Caucasian people are not monolithic in their attitude in terms of how African Americans in law enforcement relate. And many Caucasians feel just as strongly as some of us do that too often our people are victims of gross political malfeasance. I mean, police malfeasance. We're victims of that. I've seen many marches where the protesters were diverse. But now, we have to be honest. The situation is nuanced. Some of our young brothers are projecting such a high level of predatory behavior that they are spooking these poorly trained and unprepared law enforcement people. Can I prove it? Take a look at that officer that pumped 4 bullets in the arm now of Philando Castile. Look how he snapped, pulled a train, scared to death, gun still cocked on a dead African American body, gun cocked on a woman with a 4-year-old child in the car with a technological instrument barely visible in her hands. The rest of them panicked, ordered her out the car. 3 grown men loaded to the hilt, got the ups on this woman in a beautiful posture of confrontation. Clear that the woman is not armed. Clear that the 4-year-old baby is not armed. So the problem is made more complicated because you and I both know that there's some dangerous young African American males out there. That's not by any shape, form, or fashion to justify official malfeasance under the color of state law by these folks. But it is to acknowledge that there's something in our community, brother, ma'am, that we're going to have to straighten out. We're going to have to get a grip on the sad state of affairs as to how we have allowed a massive incineration in our community, burning up the solid morals of African-American people, producing a generation where some do not respect God's sacred life. But I'm against even those being summarily judged and summarily executed by law enforcement, who, when they see an African American project monstrous fears, panic, and begin to blast. How do you explain 2 men on top of another man, arms stretched out, pinned down, and one within 3 inches of that man hard, blast him in the chest, 3 shots, and then blast him in the back 3 shots. That's not just a racist. That's a man that's a paid stiff and just shooting out of fear. These are the realities that we're going to have to deal with. I think most of American media, with any sense, most of the people in the establishment, they understand that what happened with Alton Sterling and with Orlando Castillo was beyond the pale. They understand the implications of that for the integrity of our democracy. They're not trying to cover that up. You have a few regressive congressional people in the 40-member Freedom Caucus on the Republican right that refuse to acknowledge the reality. But most understand that there is a problem. But there also, as I indicated, problems in our own community with this stuff that we're going to have to address. Can't just look at it as a problem of externality and deny and evade the responsibility of dealing with the internalities, the ramifications of this bad situation of predatory behavior in our community.
Yes, I have. I haven't had the opportunity to read the newspaper, and frankly, I haven't watched television the last 2 days, recovering from Chicago. But I would say this. I'd like to say I was kind of taken back, somewhat surprised, but not that surprised by Minnesota, a state that I've had the privilege of living in, one of the first states that I visited when I left Lynchburg, Virginia. In fact, also the first state that I was ever called a nigger in. I landed in Minneapolis, Minnesota, thought it was the land of freedom. Was in the YMCA waiting to go to Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And the guy said right to my face, "What is that nigger doing in here?" So up north, south, I was also almost killed in Madison, Wisconsin, the bastion of liberalism. I just thought I would say that in passing. I would like to know, and this is a question that has come to me, and I want you to answer it. You don't have to answer it as a lawyer or anything. Someone asked me this just a few days ago. I had my own answer, but I want to hear your answer. So you have a president of the United States, African-American, first lady, African-American, lawyers, an attorney general, African-American, an African-American woman attorney general, and yet we can't get an indictment of the killers of Tamir Rice. This is a question that was posed to me. We can't get an indictment of the killer of Trayvon Martin and many others. Is there something wrong with that picture?
The key figures in these kinds of problematic situation is the local district attorney. In the case,
no. Here's the question the person asked me.
I'm answering.
In the case of Rodney King, they continued on. Even though the state courts had come back with a verdict, not guilty, the federal government had charged civil rights violation. And so that's the question today. But one of these people is a first-year law student. So they might be listening now because one of them, no, I think this guy's a second-year law student. He posed it in a barbershop, and I gave him my answers. But I thought that, this program is a forum, I tell people, that people are allowed to come on and give their own positions. And they have their positions. I have guests who give their own positions. We're going to have some people from the African-American right. It used to be from the right. Glenn Lowry's going to be on this show soon. We're going to have some. We're hoping to reach out to Sister Michelle Alexander, that I also just recently, looking her bio up, found out that her husband is the assistant U.S. attorney, a very qualified young man, for the Southern District of Ohio. So, you know, I'm ready to reach out to everybody. So I just want to tell you that the opinions on this program are the opinions of myself when I express them, the opinions of others. So, brother, I want to qualify this by saying to the audience, this brother, Imam Yusuf Salam, not only is an imam, has been a legislator and has been a law professor at two very highly reputable American law schools. So with that, I'm going to ask him to answer the question.
Well, let me just touch base on your Minnesota point. Prior to situation with Castile, there was a murder of Slow. They call him Slow, DeAndre in Milwaukee. No action taken. Then in Wisconsin, there was another situation where an African American was killed by an officer who had been involved, I think, in a prior shooting, I think, a prior killing. No action taken. Now, this is Wisconsin. But in the state of Minnesota, there was a big thing with the late Jamar Clark. Everybody felt that that was a case that would bring about some accountability. It did not. Nature is strange. If you don't check power, then power is going to continue to expand itself. That's with any discipline. Power unchecked is expensive power. And so we had to end up where the police powers expanded into a territory where something is blatantly in violation of police practices in order to find some accountability in Minnesota. In the case of these Justice Department cases, you see, the governor invited and Louisiana invited the Justice Department in right away. Generally speaking, these cases are first dealt with on a local and state level. It's what happened with Michael Brown. It's what happened with Tamir Rice. In both cases, the prosecutor controlled the situation, stacked the deck to bring about a situation where law enforcement is exonerated. The case can go up to the Justice Department, but there's a very high level of proof in those cases. The late Attorney General Eric Holder, who no one can accuse of not being an avowed advocate for the rights of African American people, was very hesitant to engage in picking up on some of these cases because of the difficulty of establishing a violation under the statute. The president, the attorney general, or no one else in the federal government can blatantly ignore or contravene the federal statutory provision that governs the Justice Department intervention in these cases. I hope I answered the question.
Yes. Secondly,
I hope I answered the question.
Yeah, you did. You certainly did. I have found in the northern states, this is my opinion, that I felt more unsafe but people who had no real knowledge of me, had no contact with me. With the southern people I've had contact with, at least my mama had, she nursed them on her breast. She, on occasion, my daddy didn't permit her to cook for them. He didn't want them in the house, but she did nurse some of them.
Excuse me, brother, ma'am, go ahead. I got to deal with them. Something for about a minute. I'll be right back
on
the line. Please continue, my brother.
Yes, sir. So
I'll be right back.
Yes, sir. I've had the northern people that knew little of anything about me to be the most challenging of people. But I do know that the southern folk, have been a people that least I've had contact with. So I think that is a real major problem for us. When our brother returned, I do have a question to ask him about us returning from Chicago, where I think we had a close to 84 shootings. And we're going to come home now. I always like to come home. I usually let others deal with the external, but my specialty is home. I guess I have fond memories of going to revival services and coming to the homecoming service. So y'all excuse my...
Good.
The morning bench. I still must tell you that chills come down my spine when I think about the morning's bench, and I think about how people say, "Tell me how I feel when I came out of the wilderness." So I think our folk need a good conversion experience to come back to God. I plan and intend the rest of my years, the next 3-4 years, to travel throughout this country and call for a great awakening among African Americans to return to the old-time religion. We're still pushing for a coalition to be formed out of Chicago, where we hope to go into Chicago, if necessary, to do a campaign on the south side. And I'm calling, I've asked some of the rabbis, I've asked some of the swamis, I asked some of the priests, and I'm asking the imams. Let's go into the south side and have a sleep-in, a sit-in, and demand that. I used to say, let's do this as an African-American, but I think it's about high time that we make this a human issue. Something's wrong, as Fred Shuttleworth said. He said, something wrong when 84 folk get killed. Ain't nobody talking about it. Something wrong when little babies are getting shot in alleys. And what is something wrong is nobody in the clergy. I'm out there, the church out there in Chicago that has 20,000 members. They have 10,000 people come out just for one service. Something wrong when you have preachers like Otis Barnes III, a phenomenal preacher, that has inherited a great pulpit by Jeremiah Alexander Wright, I believe Jeremiah A. Wright, church. I don't hear the hue and cry why the African-American clergy claim to have taken up Dr. King's robes, taken up his pulpits. I don't understand why there's an outrage from John Lewis, a preacher of the gospel, Rev. Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, Reverend Cleveland, congressman from Kansas City, as an ordained Baptist preacher, and many others. Why have we heard a hue and cry from the clergy of the African-American Christians? I know the African-American Muslims, imams, are asleep, need a good cup of coffee, and need to wake up. But I want to wonder why we haven't heard from these people on this mass incineration. And again, like I said, I'm just stuck. I'm just an old country preacher that's been used to going to revivals. And I do know. Now, let me tell you something. I want to talk to conversion, too, for a moment. Now, y'all indulge me for one moment. I've seen real sinners, men who were corrupt, come. come to the mourner's bench and really was touched by the Spirit of God to change our lives. I've seen alcoholics give up alcohol, drug addicts give up our drug addiction, sex addicts give up sex addiction. I've seen that happen in Ramadan for many. I've also seen it happen at the Christian mourner's bench. So I'm going to shut up, Brother Imam, because I'm really being moved, because I'm very saddened by what has happened on the south side of Chicago just the weekend I was visiting. And I happened to stay on the south side of Chicago in a hotel that I think was heavily populated by people committing acts that would shame even a dog. I slept well. It was Ramadan. They told me not the greatest hotel to stay in, but I told the desk clerk, an African-American, if you listen, Brother Andre, Dion, rather, thank you for watching my back while I was in there that night. I slept on the floor near the front desk for protection. Anyway, it is a shame, and I ask Allah's protection. But I'm very shamed by what I have seen in the city that the President of the United States lived in, the Imam Anwaruddin Muhammad lived in, and I know it pained him to no end. The Ambulance Mama lived in. All that, where even Reverend Justin Lewis Jackson resides, and Miss Lewis Farrakhan, formerly known as Lewis Joe Walcott. All these people, persons live in this great city, and yet the city is wrecked by violence.
Well, Brother Imam, and I know some of the listeners may identify with me as a person coming in legal garb, and they may not understand this blatant switch to just a deep, brisk religious statement. But Lady Ma'am Muhammad, I read during Ramadan again, said the Muslim Ummah in general is cursed. And then he said the African-American community is cursed. And I believe that Chicago, that turned its back on this once-in-a-millennium leader, is under a double curse. I also believe that about the city in which he was born in, that never really gave him super favorite son status during his lifetime. I believe in my heart that Detroit, Michigan, and Chicago, Illinois, frequently and blatantly rejected a mercy from God that was placed in their midst. And I truly believe that we are suffering the consequences of that rejection. For those secular-minded people in the audience, they may think that that's harsh or cruel, and I understand that. I understand your feeling. But I'm telling you like it is. This excellent leader should have been embraced, worked with, and supported. And as a community now in Chicago and in Detroit, we would have been way down the line. But as it is, we are in a deep period of regression. I believe we cursed in Chicago. I believe we cursed in Detroit.
Well, all you have to do is drive through the South Side and you'll see it. It is a fact. I mean, it doesn't have to look. Anytime on the weekends, the police, I almost have called for the National Guard to come out. I want to make an announcement quickly, if I could indulge you before one of my last questions. I don't know whether you have a few more minutes. But the announcement
I'm at your disposal, Brother Imam.
Thank you. With God's name, the merciful benefactor, merciful redeemer, you are invited to join Sunday, July the 10th, 2016, at Weekway Park, Newark, New Jersey. The Meeker Avenue entrance, the Eat area. Bring your family, friends, and neighbors. It's free. activities for children of all ages. This is the New Africa 19th Annual Family Festival. Vendors should register in advance. For information, call Adeeb Shaka, 973-420-4172, or Akbar Salam, 973-624-4847. And you can also go to the website, www.fathersonmenandboysorganization.org, and there is an opportunity for a donate button. Brother Adeeb Shaka, Chairman Adeeb Shaka, has been working for the past 19 years out of his brother's back pocket to finance this event. He's been struggling to do a three-day event in another city wrecked by violence, a city where you can expect to have your one out of four shots of getting your car hijacked. It's considered the hijacked capital of these United States. These are cities that are at alarming rates, and we need to do something about it. And this Sunday, everything's going to stop. I'm going to invite the entire community to come out just to fellowship with us. I wish I was giving a speech because I got a speech prepared for us. And the name of my speech would be called Stumbling and Bumbling in the Promised Land. You know, our people won't be... Come on, now that we got disconnected. Brother Imam, you still with us? Okay. We lost the connection to Brother Imam, but just want to invite you all out this Sunday to Wakeway Park. Now all you can just Google it, go to Google Maps, and find a way to Wakeway Park for the New Africa Family Day. It'll be a great event. Food, first of all, faith, fellowship, family, food, family again, and fun. So let's come out. I don't know whether we lost Brother Imam, Yusuf Salam, but if he is, anyone else want to make a comment? Have a few minutes on the air. Brother Adeeb Shaka, he has anything to say. Brother Adeeb, if you're with us, you might make a comment and invite the people to come out to bend, to spin, and to enjoy New Africa.
Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Imam Alfred. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you loud and clear.
19 years
of clarity.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Yes, as you were saying, we would like to invite the whole community, the entire community, out on Sunday to join on with us in celebration of the New Africa Family Day in Wakeway Park for our 19th year of doing this. And we are looking forward to having many people, many families coming out from many different states. You know, I've had people call from Maryland, Virginia, up in Massachusetts and different places. They're coming down to Philadelphia to be with us on this occasion. And because it has been for the last 18 years a very good event, and people leave from the event with an impression in their mind, a nice social gathering, wherein it's a peaceful gathering, when people are just enjoying themselves, family, enjoying each other's company. Strangers meeting new people and becoming friends or somebody that connected to you, you be connected to for maybe the rest of your life. And children, especially the children, they're having a good time. They're enjoying the open space. You know, it's a lot of space. Children can play and run and do just about anything they want to do out there, and in a safe environment. And this is what we are looking for. This is what the country needs now: more sober social and social event for the people, when the people can sit down and communicate with one another, and maybe we can work out some of these issues that we have in our lives and in our community, in our society, you know. And this is what we have been working to do for the last 19 years. We invite you to come on out and join with us. And we are looking for vendors. There'll be many people there, so you bring your product out and vend and make some money, some finance to help yourself. And we need a donation. We need assistance, financial assistance. So whatever you can give, we'll be more than glad to accept it and appreciate it. So come on out Sunday the 10th, July 10th. The event starts officially at 12 o'clock and go until sunset. But we'll be there. If you are vending, you can come out and start setting up by 10 o'clock in the morning. So we look forward to seeing you there. And we appreciate Ma'am Alfred and his radio broadcast for allowing us this time to invite you out. And Ma'am Alfred, matter of fact, I was trying to call you earlier to suggest to you that brothers like yourself to be out there and talk to some of our young people, you know, make it a special effort to talk to some of our young people to bring their attention to the time that we are living in and how we have to proceed in moving forward as a people, and especially as young African American males. So we welcome you to come out and dialogue with the people and be there.
I welcome that. In fact, I hope to live broadcast. I hope to be there at 12 o'clock. I plan this year be there early. Because this is a pressing time. This is not a playtime. We don't know what's going to happen in this country.
Serious.
This is a very serious time. And the wrong move on the part of our people could cause a cataclysmic type reaction. I mean, you could have people going around killing police officers, actually cause a person like Donald Trump, a madman, to get in. And this could cause an open race war in this country. These are dangerous times.
Sir.
These are not times to play. These are times for serious, bold leadership. I will say,
I was at
Juma today, and I heard an imam, I won't name him, give a very good khutbah that addresses the problem. I said to myself, this is good. It's kind of late, but we got to address our people. Our people are hurting.
Yes.
They have caused a lot of hurt and pain to themselves and others, and we have become the laughing stock of the world. And I hate to say it, but I think we'll put ourselves in a position of beating that shooters down and nothing is said about it. But a lot of it is our own fault, man. 80% of it is the other people's fault, but 20% we have a big responsibility for going down the mud pile. I definitely will be out. And I tell you, I have another very outstanding person that's working with me. He just happened to be my son, Alfred Y. Muhammad. I'd love to see him address the people. So with your permission, I'd like to broadcast right from that site. Right there. Yes, sir.
You're welcome to.
Yes, sir. I thank you. I thank you for that opportunity. Thank you.
Yes,
and I expect to see all of you out tomorrow. I mean, Sunday. If you're on the East Coast, doesn't cost you anything. Build a car. Bring your family. This is another thing we have to do. We have to be prepared to show up in crowds.
That's right.
Large number of us. And don't come out and don't bring some money. You got money. Come out, donate. At least if we get 1,000 people to donate $20, I'm sure we can find enough food to feed all of you all.
That's right. Most definitely.
Yes. And we can do that. This is not something that we can't do. And you can set up your own tent and feed your own family. But let's come together. It's important for African Americans to come together in a peaceful manner to show the world that we are civilized and we are befitting of the great blessing Almighty God has bestowed upon you. Yes, sir. Any closing remarks?
I would go farther than to say that we can do it. It's no longer as to whether we can or cannot do it. We must do it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes. I stand correct. We must do it, especially in these times. You know, and I just have to add to it, Brother Deep. You know, we're ending the president. Well, this is a year of mercy. The president of the United States, an African American, is the president of the United States. We don't know what will happen within the next few years. As Dr. King would say back years ago, we have some difficult days ahead. And this is not looking great, you know. Mm-hmm. And I must tell you, these people going out here killing police officers are not helping our cause at all. They're not people motivated. They're people that are sick people who just want their fame because they want to end our lives and play with our movement. Same thing happened to us in 1968 with a man that Ahmed Evans who starts shooting police officers. Next thing, we got Richard Nixon. We had another guy. We had people doing the same thing, and after Dr. King passed, while Dr. King was down in Memphis with a just cause, the invaders came and raiding and tearing up buildings and stuff. So we have to understand that everybody who said they're with us are not with us. They're here to sabotage our efforts.
All right, so thank you very much, Imam Alfred.
Thank you, Brother Adiba, and look forward to seeing everybody at Weekly Park for the New Africa Family Day. Doors open at 12 o'clock. Get there early. Set up vendors. Again, call Brother Deep Shack at 973-420-4172. I hope you just ring his phone off the hook and get your space. There will be at least 10,000 people there. There will be business. There will be activity. It's an opportunity for our family to come together. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. Thank you.
Oh, okay. What, McLaughlin?
Mm-hmm.
What's called? She's up. She's up.